We're speaking today with Norman Finkelstein. He received his doctorate in 1988 from the Department of Politics at Princeton University. For many years, he taught political theory and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He's currently an independent scholar. Mr. Finkelstein is the author of 5 books, which have been translated into more than 40 foreign editions, including The Holocaust Industry, Reflections on the Exploitation of Jewish Suffering, Beyond Chutzpah, on the Misuse of Anti-Semitism and the Abuse of History, and Image and Reality of the Israel-Palestine Conflict. He's just completed a new book entitled A Farewell to Israel, The Coming Breakup of American Zionism, which will be released in 2009. Mr. Finkelstein, welcome to Maastricht.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to start off, we just listened to you speaking at the Studium Generale event from Maastricht University. I was wondering if you could tell us, do you notice a difference in your reception in the United States as opposed to in Europe at all?
No, actually the audiences, college audiences, their reception tends to be fairly homogeneous. Wherever I speak, there seems to be an element of seriousness, earnestness, and interest. If you treat the audience with respect, or if you treat a college classroom with respect, wherever you go, it's pretty much the same reception.
The Holocaust Industry, Reflections on the Exploitation of Jewish Suffering, was published in 2000. I was wondering if you could tell us what the Holocaust Industry is.
Basically, it's the exploitation of the colossal suffering of Jews during World War II for political and then for a certain period financial gain. The political gain was basically using the Nazi Holocaust as a club to silence criticism of Israel. And at some point, this Holocaust compensation racket, the extraction of monies from European governments in the name of what were called needy Holocaust victims, began. And I think the figure comes now to about $20 billion, were coerced from European governments, mostly on fraudulent grounds.
Okay. You've spoken about the Holocaust in two different lights. One is the historical event, the Nazi Holocaust, and the other is the ideological Holocaust that you're mentioning now, that's used as a means of profiteering. Would that be a fair categorization?
Profiteering and political intimidation.
Could you contrast the two? What is the picture of the actual history as opposed to the one that's presented?
The actual history, there are many competent historians who've done excellent research on the topic. It's not the historians that usually get the big reviews in the mainstream media. They treat the topic with great seriousness. And as I say, there's accumulated a significant body of research pioneered by Raoul Hilberg, the Austrian-born and an American political scientist, his book being The Destruction of the European Jews. And then there's all of this schlock nonsense, which basically is used to defend Israel and deflect criticism of Israeli policy. You can usually tell this literature because it asserts or insists on the absolute uniqueness of the Nazi Holocaust, the claim that no people in the history of humanity have ever suffered the way Jews suffered. And that's clearly an ideological claim. You can't intellectually prove things like that, and it's almost absurd to want to prove them. The purpose is fairly straightforward. That is, if people have uniquely suffered, then they can't be held to conventional moral and legal standards. So, for example, if you say that Israel tortures Palestinian detainees, well, then you're told, remember the Holocaust. Or if you're told that Israel illegally demolishes the homes of Palestinians, you're told, remember the Holocaust. The point being, that because Jews suffered uniquely, it somehow excuses these, by any other standard, crimes.
Okay. Would you like something to drink?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. We said this evening, and I'm paraphrasing because I wasn't able to write it down quickly enough, there exists a consensus for realizing the Israeli-Palestinian, for resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Mm-hmm.
There's no conflict in the world which is less complicated, mm-hmm. less controversial. Referring again to the publication of the Holocaust industry, when the hardcover edition came out, and I'm quoting from the foreword to the softcover edition later, mm-hmm. The book evoked considerable reaction internationally. In contrast to the deafening roar elsewhere, the initial response in the United States was silence. Why is that? Why in the United States is there this idea that that it's such a complex issue, and why was there silence when this book came out?
Well, no, I think that we're confusing. I spoke this evening on the Israel-Palestine conflict and said that it was relatively uncomplicated, probably the least complicated conflict in the world. But with the case of the Nazi Holocaust, there are serious scholarly questions which it's not easy to supply answers to. In fact, the most basic questions remain areas of great contention among historians. The basic questions are, why did Hitler order the Nazi Holocaust, and when did he order it? The why and the when, and in fact, there's no agreement among historians on the answers to those two questions.
So this idea that often emerges of linking the Holocaust to the necessity for Israel, or
mm-hmm.
that's not a valid correlation, or
people can make that sort of argument, and I don't think it's in itself invalid. The issue that arises is, given the catastrophe that Jews experienced or endured during World War II, can a catastrophe even of those dimensions or of that magnitude, can a catastrophe of that magnitude justify the ethnic cleansing of Palestine? That's the issue. And in my opinion, the answer is no. No amount of human suffering can justify the kinds of suffering which were inflicted on the people that clearly had no responsibility for the suffering itself.
Speaking of this correlating of these two historical events, the Holocaust and the establishment of the State of Israel, you've turned some references to the Third Reich on their head in the past. On the April 16th, 2002 episode of Democracy Now!, you said that a rally supporting Jewish occupation of Palestinian lands and opposing negotiations with Yasser Arafat resembled, and this is the quote, a Jewish version of a Nuremberg rally more than it did a peace rally.
Mm-hmm.
You've referenced Hitler's Lebensraum, the idea of a virgin, empty Eastern Europe, to the Zionist argument that Palestine was a virgin, empty wilderness, as typified mm-hmm. by From Time Immemorial by Joan Peters. That claims that much of 1948 Palestine's population were recent immigrants from neighboring Arab states, non-Jewish population. Is it, and this is a rhetorical question, but is it appropriate in the wake of the Holocaust to make such comparisons?
Well, the examples you cited didn't pertain directly to the Nazi Holocaust. If you say a rally resembles a Nuremberg rally, I'm not sure what's the connection between that and speaking about Auschwitz or exterminations or genocide. And similarly, the second example you gave, the Lebensraum, that's not necessarily the Nazi Holocaust. The Lebensraum dealt with the conquest of Eastern Europe. As a general rule, I'm not sure what's the point of studying history if you can't compare and contrast, because that seems to me the essence of history. Typical history question in high school. compare and contrast the French and Russian revolutions, compare and contrast the British and the French monarchy. Comparing and contrasting is the essence of history. So then to now suddenly say that when it comes to the Nazi Holocaust, nothing can be compared and nothing can be contrasted, and it suddenly becomes a case of Holocaust denial to even compare or contrast. Well, of course, you're allowed to contrast. You're allowed to say nothing compares. That seems to me to turn what should be history into some sort of religion. You're just worshiping at some totem, and the totem is called the Holocaust.
Given this idea that the Holocaust doesn't give the Jewish people special dispensation, so mm-hmm. to speak, is it fair to say that they're guilty of hypocrisy for, in the wake of the Holocaust, the treating the Palestinians in the manner that they are? Or does the Holocaust exonerate them to a degree?
I don't think any suffering in you endure exonerates you and gives you the right to inflict suffering on others. That doesn't make any sense to me. The usual relationship is that it's supposed to sensitize you to other people's sufferings, not give you the right to abuse other people. That doesn't seem to make much sense to me. And I don't think I would say much beyond that.
On July 4th in 1946, in the Polish town of, I'm going to try and pronounce this correctly, Kielce, mm-hmm. There was a pogrom where 37 Jews were killed, including many survivors of the death camps. The murders were instigated with the claim of the medieval claim of blood libel, this idea that Jews used the blood of Christian children in their rituals. And there were other acts of violence against the Jews in the post-war period, but the Kielce pogrom served, at least at the time, as a symbol for the necessity of a Jewish state. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who had returned to Poland and other parts of Europe used that as a reason. This is why we need a Jewish state. Do you think that Kielce and the subsequent conflicts between the Jews and the neighboring Arab states lend any legitimate credence to this idea that Israel and the Jews are eternal victims, that they have to have sort of a fortified state?
As I said, I think a reasonable person can make the argument that given what Jews endured during World War II would justify their claims on the state. I think you can make that argument. I happen not to agree with it, because I think the alternative of fighting for your rights within the state you happen to reside in, is also an option. That was, for example, Gandhi's position. The Jews should have fought for their rights as equal citizens within the state that they reside in. But you can, I think reasonable people can say that as an alternative to fighting for the rights within your state, people might decide the struggle is futile or it's not worth it, and so we'd like to establish our own state. I could see that argument. But that is not really, that's not really the issue at stake here. The issue at stake here is, do those claims, do those historic and colossal historical injustices, do they justify the ethnic cleansing of the indigenous population of an area? And I think the answer to that is plainly no.
Do you think the answer would have been different in the colonial period?
The answer might have been different in the colonial period, but that's just saying colonialism is wrong.
Okay. All right. I'd like to read you a quote from the book Explaining Hitler by Ron mm-hmm. Rosenbaum. Mm-hmm. He's referring in this quote specifically to Claude Lanzmann, he's French, I hope I pronounced his name correctly, a Paris-based filmmaker who created the 9.5-hour film Shoah, that mm-hmm. was released in 1985. Rosenbaum said, for Lanzmann, the attempt to explain Hitler is not merely futile, but immoral. He calls the very enterprise of understanding obscene. There are some pictures, and this is Lanzmann speaking, of Hitler as a baby too, aren't there, he said. There's even a book written about Hitler's childhood, an attempt at explanation, which is for me obscenity as such. Rosenbaum then said, one can sense why Lanzmann finds the impressionable plasticity of the baby pictures of a fatally alluring invitation, the deceptive and dangerous promise of understanding. I'm wondering, do you see any correlations between Lanzmann's characterization of Hitler explainers with those who of those who address the question why, which is the question that's always repeated about the Holocaust, as obscene to the modern state of Israel's assertion that many of its critics are anti-Semitic?
Look, this is just nonsense. It's just meaningless and trivial. Plasticity of pictures. What do these terms mean? They're completely empty-headed. It's obscene to try to understand. Now, I understand that the documentary he produced was quite good. My parents liked it. I never watched it. But why is it obscene to try to understand why a phenomenon happened? Do you want to worship at it? Do you want to explain it? Or do you want to understand it in order to avert its repetition? To say you don't, I'm trying to understand it is obscene. I'm afraid to say this is typical French intellectual drivel. And then these expressions, obscene as such. What does as such mean? It's just this pretentious twaddle. I don't know why people even pay attention to this. It's pseudo-profundity. Would you say of any other crime in history, it's obscene to try to understand it? Oh, it's okay to try to understand Genghis Khan and Joseph Stalin, but it's obscene to try to understand Hitler. Why?
Do you think that attempt to characterize understanding as obscene has influenced the perception of criticisms of Israel today? For example, in Thomas Friedman's book,
The whole purpose of this is to put the Nazi Holocaust in a category all its own. Everything else is understandable. The Nazi Holocaust is not understandable. Everything else we should try to rationally comprehend. The Nazi Holocaust, it's obscene to try to comprehend it. It's all designed to prove the uniqueness of the Nazi Holocaust and therefore the uniqueness of Jewish suffering and therefore to exempt Jews in Israel from ordinary moral standards. It's a shakedown. It's moral extortion.
At the beginning of the presentation this evening, there was this statement that you grew up in a home that was hostile to war. I'd like to ask you a question about your parents, if that's okay. You're the son of two Holocaust survivors. Correct me if I'm incorrect, they were both in the Warsaw Ghetto. And your father survived Auschwitz and your mother, Majdanek.
Majdanek,
sorry, I didn't pronounce it correctly. How do you think they would perceive, they would see your perspectives of the Holocaust? Would they agree?
My parents lived until 1995, and I was already quite active politically on this issue since the very early 1980s, and there were no major disagreements. There probably would have been disagreements had they lived regarding my views of the Germans. I'm not prepared to categorize any group of people as being evil. And my parents, there was no love lost between them and the Germans or them and the Polish people. We probably would have disagreed and probably would have disagreed strongly on that issue.
All right, well, anyone else have a question? Those are all the questions I have.
Okay, that's fine.
It was a pleasure to speak with you, and it was also a pleasure to hear your lecture this evening.
Well, thank you.